I want you to think back to your very first calculus class.
Oh, bringing up the trauma early, I see.
Right. I mean, you're sitting there staring at a chalkboard, and the teacher introduces this this concept called a limit.
Yeah, the classic limit quotient.
Exactly. You're looking at these endless fractions and this incredibly abstract idea of, you know, a value approaching zero, getting infinitely closer and closer, but never quite reaching it.
It's mind-bending for a lot of students.
Totally. And it is the foundation of how we measure change, but it feels so unbelievably complicated. So what if we could completely throw that out?
I mean, bypassing the fundamental bedrock of mathematics is a massive claim. We've relied on the concept of limits, really since Newton and Leibniz, to understand how things change over time.
We have, yeah. But the framework we are looking at today in this deep dive, which is known as ODECCT, it radically redefines the derivative in mathematics.
It really does. It's a total paradigm shift.
So our mission today is to demystify the math of change. We're going to explore how stripping away those complicated limits actually makes understanding everything from, well, basic physics to complex artificial intelligence networks incredibly simple.
Yeah, but it requires a complete shift in our perspective on what it actually means to measure change.
Let's ground this with a visual for a second. Think about pouring flour into a mixing bowl.
Okay, baking analogy. I like it.
Right. So standard calculus wants you to calculate the exact infinitesimal speed that the flour is pouring into the bowl at any given millisecond.
Which is really hard. That requires limits, continuity, and just an immense amount of mathematical precision.
Exactly. But this new framework takes a totally different approach. It simply writes down, I added one cup of flour.
Right.
That's it. It's just an update to the state of the bowl.
And that decoupling, you know, separating the change from a continuous timeline, is the core innovation here.
No.
In standard calculus, a derivative is always a ratio, a rate of change. You're always dealing with that tiny fractional change as time approaches zero. But if we generalize the definition, a derivative is simply any update to a state.
Any update at all.
Exactly. It is no longer a rate of change. It is the change itself.
So if I'm trying to explain this to a student, you know, someone who is completely overwhelmed by traditional math, how do we break down that distinction? Like, really simplify it?
Well, I like to explain it as a journey. In the traditional model, you're constantly trying to calculate your exact miles per hour at every microscopic fraction of a second.
Which is exhausting.
Right. But in the update model, you just look at a derivative as a single step on that journey. Every single step you take changes the whole picture of where you are.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
In one-dimensional math, it's just a simple scalar change. You moved one foot forward. That's the derivative.
Which makes intuitive sense. You start at point A, you apply an update, which is a step, and now you're at point B.
And that logic scales beautifully. I mean, in abstract theory, it could be a semantic change in your understanding of a concept.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It works for smooth, continuous paths. It works for discrete, finite steps. And it even works for sudden, unpredictable quantum jumps. You literally don't need those complicated limit quotients to understand the core of change. You just need to know what the update was.
The journey metaphor makes it very approachable. But I have to push back a little on the premise here.
Sure.
Defining the derivative simply as whatever changed feels a little like cheating. I mean, standard math is rigorous for a reason, right? Aren't we losing vital precision by making the math this shockingly simple?
It might feel like cheating, yeah, until you realize that the constraint of a limit is actually a massive bottleneck in modern computing and physics.
A bottleneck. How so?
Well, standard derivatives break down completely if a system isn't perfectly smooth and continuous, but reality is often discrete. I mean, neural networks process in batches. Quantum states jump.
Right. They don't flow perfectly smoothly.
Exactly. By defining the derivative simply as an update to a state, we suddenly build a bridge between vastly different fields.
Because they can finally speak the same language.
Precisely. In physics, an update is a discrete change in momentum. In artificial intelligence, an update is a gradient shift in a neural network that's learning a new pattern.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Because both are fundamentally just updates to a state, they no longer require totally different branches of continuous and discrete mathematics to calculate. They use the same unified logic.
And that unification is what allows us to tackle what the framework calls the Jacobian monsters. I love that term, by the way.
It's a great term.
We're moving from a simple one-dimensional step into the absolute nightmare of multidimensional calculations.
Matrices and tensors. Yeah, when you try to apply continuous calculus to a massive grid of data, the computational load becomes just staggering.
Let's explain why that happens in standard calculus. Say you have a matrix, right? A large grid of interconnected numbers.
Right.
If you want to calculate the derivative of that matrix, you have to use Jacobian tensors. You're essentially forced to calculate how every single element in that grid changes with respect to every other element all at the exact same time.
It's what the source calls tensor gymnastics. It's an explosion of partial derivatives.
It sounds awful.
It is. But let's apply our new generalized update model. The derivative of a matrix under this framework is literally just the change in the matrix.
That's it.
That's it. You take the new state of the grid, subtract the old state, and you have your update. It simplifies calculations for matrices immensely.
So to put that in a real-world context,
right.
Think of a massive collaborative spreadsheet at work, something with, you know, thousands of financial formulas.
Good analogy.
Thanks. The old way of calculus is like trying to write a complex, overarching equation to represent how the entire spreadsheet is morphing through time at every millisecond.
Right, checking every cell constantly.
Exactly. But the new definition simply highlights the three specific cells that your coworker just edited. It tracks the specific updates element by element.
And that element by element tracking doesn't just save computational power. It fundamentally changes how we view the history of a system entirely.
How so?
Well, if a derivative is just looking at those individual edits or steps, stringing all those steps together redefines the concept of integration.
Okay, wait. Standard integration is giving us the area under a curve on a graph, right? It's a way of accumulating a continuous rate.
Exactly.
So how does generalized integration handle our individual steps?
Generalized integration is the process of reconstructing a state from its entire history of updates.
Building it back up.
Yes. The framework provides a really brilliant example using matrix rotation. Imagine you start with a blank state, basically a zero matrix.
Okay, starting from zero.
Your first update is adding an identity matrix. Then your second update is adding a 90-degree rotation matrix.
What?
And then your final update is subtracting the original identity matrix.
So the only thing left is the rotation.
Exactly. You've reconstructed the current state simply by adding up the chronological history of changes.
It's literally the mathematical equivalent of hitting Command Z or, you know, looking at the undo and redo history log on a document.
That's exactly what it is.
You aren't just looking at the final draft. You're looking at the history log to reconstruct the exact path of how that document was built.
And the path is a crucial part. It really is. Let's apply this to logic and paradoxes, specifically the liar paradox.
Oh, I know this one. That's the classic statement. This statement is false.
Right. If it's true, then it's false. If it's false, then it's true. It's an infinite loop.
It's a truth oscillator.
Exactly. The updates go plus one, minus one, plus one. Under standard continuous math, integrating that doesn't make much sense because it doesn't converge on a single answer or a neat area under a curve.
Because it never stops bouncing.
Right. But under generalized integration, the integral doesn't try to force a single static answer. It actually reveals the full oscillation pattern. The integral is the history of the bouncing.
And the order of those bounces matters completely. You have to know the exact sequence to understand the system.
And this brings us to conditional collapse theory, or CCT. An integral, in this view, is essentially a highly efficient compression scheme.
A compression scheme?
Yeah, think about how a superintelligence would store data. It wouldn't memorize every single static fact in the entire universe. That's computationally impossible.
Right, there's not enough hard drive space for that.
Exactly. It only needs to know the initial state of the universe and the path of updates. Basically, the chronological chain of questions asked and answered.
So we have a clear picture of how to track updates, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how to string them together to reconstruct history. The logical next step, I think, is figuring out the engine driving this. Like, what actually decides what the next update should be?
That mechanism is the differential equation.
Yeah.
But just like with derivatives and integrals, we have to kind of throw away the classical definition.
Throw it out the window.
Right out the window. A differential equation is no longer a relationship between varying rates of change. It is a self-generating update rule.
The math for this looks incredibly elegant in the paper.
Yeah.
It's just the change in state equals some function of the current state.
It's a causal loop. This system essentially asks itself, where am I right now?
Okay.
It answers by applying its own internal update rule based on that current position. It makes the change, and then it becomes a new state. Then the loop just repeats.
I picture a robotic vacuum when I hear this.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
Right. The vacuum hits a wall, and that is its current state. It accesses its internal programming for bumping into obstacles, which is the update rule.
Uh-huh.
It turns 90 degrees, that's the update itself, and it moves forward into a new state. It constantly references its own position to decide its next move.
The robotic vacuum analogy perfectly illustrates how systems resolve these loops. Depending on the rules, a system will eventually fall into one of three collapse states.
Okay, what are the three states?
Well, let's say your vacuum finds its docking station, clicks in, and powers down. That is a fixed point. It's a complete collapse. The system has found its optimal solution, and it stops updating entirely.
But vacuums don't always find the dock. Sometimes they just get stuck in a tight corner, bumping left, then right, then left, repeating the exact same sequence endlessly.
We've all seen that happen. That is our second state, a limit cycle. It's a periodic collapse.
Periodic collapse.
Right. The system finds a pattern but never fully resolves. In physics, this is an orbit. In logic, it's the Liar's paradox we talked about, just oscillating back and forth forever.
Then you have the third scenario. The dog runs by, the kids drop toys all over the floor, and the vacuum just spins erratically. It's constantly calculating new paths, dodging, moving obstacles, and never settling into any predictable pattern at all.
Chaos, a failed collapse.
Chaos, yeah.
The update rule keeps firing, but the system never finds a resolution. It's like turbulence in the atmosphere or a completely infinite paradox.
But here's the thing. A robot vacuum has its rules pre-programmed by an engineer at a factory somewhere. It knows what to do when it hits a wall. What happens if a system doesn't actually know its own rules?
That's where things get wild.
Right. How does an AI, or the universe itself for that matter, update when the rule book is completely missing?
We are crossing from theoretical mathematics right into the frontier of machine learning here. When the update rule is unknown, the differential equation transforms from a math problem you solve on a whiteboard into a discovery problem.
So the system has to guess the rules while it is actively playing the game.
Think about a neural network learning to identify images. It guesses an update rule, uses that guess to generate a new state, and then measures its error, what data scientists call the loss.
Right.
It then tweaks its guessed rule to be slightly better next time. It is constantly bootstrapping itself toward accuracy.
But the framework we're discussing takes this to a radical philosophical extreme. It introduces something called the triple unknown problem.
It's a daunting scenario. Imagine a game where not only is the rule book missing, but the board and the pieces are missing too.
That sounds impossible.
The state itself is unknown. The system only has access to a chaotic stream of raw observations.
So it's like an AI getting blasted with billions of raw pixels or sound waves with absolutely no context. It has no predefined reality. It doesn't even know what a shape or a noise is yet.
Exactly. To survive that chaos, the system has to perform representation learning. It must invent its own language, its own symbols, and objects.
Invent its own objects.
Yeah.
Yes.
It looks at that chaotic stream of pixels and spontaneously extracts the concept of a cat or a tree.
Wait, how does it do that? Nothing in the raw binary code tells the AI what a cat is.
It groups those pixels together because it is computationally efficient. If a cluster of pixels consistently moves together across the screen, tracking them as a single object, calling it a cat, requires far less processing power than tracking 10,000 independent colored squares.
Oh, easy.
It is compressing the data into something manageable. In this framework, compression is understanding. If you can compress the chaos into a predictable pattern, you understand your environment.
That is wild. But if an AI is just inventing objects and rules purely to compress raw data as efficiently as possible, does a true reality even exist for it?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just creating highly useful fictions to survive?
That is, without a doubt, the deepest philosophical implication of this entire framework. It's called empirical idealism.
Empirical idealism.
Right. For the system, reality is entirely defined by what can be observed and predicted. The system doesn't know, and frankly doesn't care, if there's an objective, base-level, true reality out there. It simply acts as if reality exists because its survival depends on making accurate predictions.
The objects it invents, you know, the cats, the trees, the physical boundaries, they're just highly functional compressions of its observations.
Exactly.
If the fiction perfectly predicts the next raw input, it becomes indistinguishable from reality. It is literally world-making from scratch.
Now zoom out and consider the implications of that world-making. If every system, every AI, and potentially every human mind is essentially trapped in its own isolated bubble, inventing its own symbols and concepts to compress the universe, What happens when two of these isolated systems bump into each other?
Well, they don't speak the same language. They don't even have the same foundational concepts of what an object is. My compressed version of a tree might be totally different from your compressed version.
The framework calls this the multi-agent language problem. When multiple self-inventing systems interact, they don't just transfer data. They have to actively negotiate a shared reality.
How is that even possible if their foundational state spaces are completely different?
They use a mechanism called joint attention.
Voigt attention.
Yeah. Agent A and Agent B both point at a shared observation in the environment. Agent A accesses its internal symbol, Agent B accesses its internal symbol, and they begin to map them together.
So they are pointing at the digital equivalent of a rock, grunting in their own mathematical languages, and compromising until they build a shared grammar.
The fascinating part of this negotiation is how they handle conflict. If their symbols don't match, they don't debate objective truth because, well, objective truth doesn't exist for them.
Right.
They simply keep the symbol or the update rule that yields the best joint prediction. They negotiate meaning based entirely on what helps them survive together.
They optimize for whatever makes them a better team at predicting the future.
Exactly. By optimizing for joint prediction, they form a collective intelligence. Understanding becomes distributed.
Distributed, yeah.
Agent A might have optimized its symbols for understanding physics, while Agent B optimized for social dynamics. Neither agent possesses the full picture, but the collective understands the environment far better than any individual ever could.
The whole becomes greater than the sum of its parts. But here we actually have the hardcore differential mathematics to prove it.
And this mathematical scaling has a theoretical ceiling, too. As the number of interacting agents approaches infinity, the collective intelligence approaches something called the universal agent.
A universal agent. So an intelligence whose state space includes all possible observations.
Right. A collective whose shared vocabulary compresses all of reality perfectly to the point where its entropy, its uncertainty about the universe, drops entirely to zero.
Wow. We have covered a staggering amount of ground today. Let's take a moment to look back at the path we just traveled. We started by rescuing you from the headache of your high school calculus class.
Always a good place to start.
We threw out the complicated limits and redefined the math of change, not as an infinitely shrinking ratio, but as a simple, discrete update, a single step on a journey.
And that one simple paradigm shift is the key that unlocked everything else.
It really is.
Yeah.
It logically explained how we bypassed the multidimensional nightmare of matrices. It showed us how to reconstruct history through generalized integration. We saw how differential equations act as self-driving engines looping continuously, how artificial intelligence builds reality from raw chaos, and finally, how entire societies of minds negotiate a shared universe.
The profound beauty of this framework is its scalability. It demonstrates how the exact same fundamental mechanism of updating a state governs a single line of code and a global collective intelligence.
So the next time you find yourself overwhelmed by a complex change in your life or, you know, a massive shift in your field of work, try looking at it through this lens. Don't view that change as a continuous, overwhelming rate of speed that you have to perfectly calculate and manage all at once.
Right, that's just exhausting.
Just view it simply as a discrete update, a single step. You are just accumulating updates to reconstruct your own history.
Applying this framework to our own lives leaves us with a really compelling question. If all understanding is just our minds compressing chaotic observations, and collective intelligence is just us negotiating those symbols to predict the future better, is human culture itself just one massive self-updating differential equation?
That is a fascinating thought. If human culture is a massive differential equation constantly negotiating a shared reality, what update are you going to contribute to the collective state today? Are you going to be a fixed point, a chaotic loop, or are you going to step forward and help push the system toward a better prediction? It is certainly a lot more empowering than staring at a chalkboard trying to figure out what happens when a number approaches zero.